This particular talk got extremely passionate and went far, far afield when it came to staying on topic. But really it didn't, if you understand that the concept of ecstasy that we're talking about is not just sexual. It has to do with reaching levels that you've never reached before. This applies to kinky play, this applies to community, this applies to individual play. It involves all sorts of things that have to do with us being extraordinary, unusual, superhuman. The metaphor that I use is of a diving board, where instead of going kapunk, 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 and then diving down into a pool, you go kapunk, 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 and move up to a whole new level that you've never been to before. And it's not something that usually happens on an individual basis. Usually it has to do with the people around us and their influence upon us. And that's really what the topic really is, both in terms of the negative aspects of what we're talking about and the positive aspects. When we talk about letting go of the past, letting go of the strictures, letting go of the shame, well, we can do that on our own, and many of us have. But it works best when everybody is supportive of each other. One of the things that is talked about during this talk is about the leather contingent during the San Diego Pride Parade in 2013. And every single person that was in that group, and it was quite a large one, felt absolutely transformed. They had no idea the reception they were going to get. It utterly, utterly turned their heads around. People were doing things in public that they never, even a year before, would have ever guessed that they would ever do. And that's ecstatic. We're going to be having a lot of things happening that are very ecstatic in our community here locally in San Diego. We've got the big flog swarm coming up. We've got all sorts of other wonderful things planned. We've got the big movie nights that get 700 people. We've got all these wonderful things where everybody feels like they're part of something larger than themselves, and they feel absolutely ecstatic. So yes, the conversation does go in every different direction, but I really do think that it follows. I really do think that it is a complete conversation. So thank you for your patience while we take you around the world. All right. Lots to talk about tonight. Once again, I do have bullet points, so it's going to be a little bit more concise than usual. This is my co-moderator tonight. This is our Tommy. Let's hear it for Tommy. Tommy has a particular talent for insightful commentary that seems to work real well for me. So we're going to be doing a lot of scampering tonight. That's why I had everybody moving inward just a little bit. I want... Yes?
Does that mean he's your straight man?
I wouldn't consider calling it straight. I mean, I've done my fair share of getting my knees dirty.
Yes, we've seen your webpage. Anyway, so yes. So what is going to be changing tonight? I'm going to be hitting the whiteboard a lot tonight. Tommy and I are going to be doing that. Come on in. Grab a chair. Get comfy. Undoubtedly, we'll need more chairs, but people are just going to have to sit in some of the outer chairs at that point. Welcome to the podcast. Okay, so just to review. Now, by the way, he found that down in Japan, found that book there. And, you know, here it is in the midst of everything, and it's hardcore male homosexual type bondage porn. Yeah.
Really?
Pardon me? Really? Personally? Nice. All right. So, let's review. First of all, I'm going to do a victory lap. I want you guys to really understand what it is that you're providing in the world. This is me talking to you guys personally. Your contribution at each of these things, when you can make it, how you can make it, whatever, actually does make a huge difference. What you guys can take for granted is that even if you haven't been here for months, even if you haven't been here at all before, but even if, you know, you show up once again 3 months from now or whatever, you can always trust that when you land, you're landing on soft cushions, metaphorically speaking. You don't have to worry about things suddenly yanking off into a horrible, unpredictable, and undesirable direction. We have a really solid basis of trust and friendship in this group. That's not something that is forced down upon us. It's an agreement that we all make together. That seems to be the magical thing that people in other countries are really, really liking about the recordings of this evening's discussion. My only regret is we didn't start recording them when we first started the group, about 100 episodes before we started recording. Because what people are really liking is actually your contribution. I mean, it's nice that they like my stuff, but what they keep bringing up over and over again, like I said, is that they'll say, there's this one guy that said this one thing, and all of a sudden everything fell into place. And so we've got people in England, all these other countries, just all over the damn place, in all these different cities. The metaphor that I came up with, the example that I gave in my write-up, was about the It Gets Better project. The thing about the It Gets Better project is that it is a way of reaching tortured youth. Dan Savage was saying that the whole point of the It Gets Better project, why it showed up in the first place, is because there's an unspoken agreement in our culture that we can torture our children, and you guys can have no access to them. You can't be role models for them. You're all horrible perverts. You're all disgusting. And we're going to torment them as much as we want, but the moment that they turn 18, suddenly then they'll have access. Well, that's not good enough. And so the whole point of the It Gets Better project is that we have the ability to speak to the youth, because there's, last time I checked, it was something like 400,000 different It Gets Better videos, and they're still being made, to our youth saying, stick around, the torment will end, it won't always be this way. There's a much better world out there than what you're currently suffering through. As I said in my email, it applies in this case too. What we have that's different is not so much torment, it's isolation. What we're fighting is loneliness. What we're fighting is a sense that I'm the only one in the world that feels this way, or my local community is not very supportive, and I really need to know what it's like to be around a bunch of really sweet guys. That is what you guys are providing, is that sense of continuity and connection. You guys, in the way that we interact with each other, it's unique to a lot of people. They've never seen it before. That how we respectfully treat each other, how we play off of each other's strengths, and why, you know, it's so hard to shush you guys during the, you know, after the breaks and all that, because you're just so happy. And see, then when this audio is edited, I'm not going to edit out the sound of the break time, because it's this constant, joyful roar that can't be faked. Hi, welcome here. Come on in. Pull up a seat. Any place is fine. We can take that for granted. But other people can't. And we need to let them know that it's not only possible, but that it's desirable and that it's attainable. That my goal, my secret agenda, which I'll tell anybody, I can't keep a secret, you know, Mr. Blabbermouth. My goal is to inform people in other cities that it is perfectly possible and damn easy, once everybody comes to an agreement, to just be nice. That we let go of all the politics, we let go of the dominance games, we let go of the ego boosts and the arm wrestling and the pissing contests and all that other noise, and just relax with each other. It's not a popular communication in many places. There are people that don't really understand what the hell it is that we're doing, because, you know, I'm taking two hands and pointing them towards each other, and they're passing each other by about a foot instead of meeting fingertip to fingertip. When we're talking past each other, because there's no way for people to relate to the original message, which is, it's okay to be tender. That's really what I've been hammering on these messages over and over again. I'm not sure that I recorded the one where I talked about the virtues of tenderness in the group. It was months back. I don't know if that one got recorded. We'll have to cover it again. But tonight is about going for the gold. And that's why I'm giving this preparatory talk about it. Because we can't skip any steps. We have to go through a certain series of processes before we can achieve ecstasy on an individual and on a cultural level. As I've been doing throughout this entire series, I'm relating the individual with the social. The work that I've been doing with Fetishman San Diego as, you know, the big talker of the group, is I've been establishing trust, not just between me and, say, an individual, but between all of us, creating opportunities for us to start finding reasons to like each other the way we show up now, Not someday when we get a more perfect set of abs, or we get younger, or a bigger dick, or more money, or more perfect genetics, whatever the hell that means. Instead of all that, why wait? Let's just start loving each other now. Let's start accepting each other now. Let's have some really fucking great times now. And to me, that's the charm of our group. When you look at what I call the tumultuous picture, the big, big, big picture of... I'll pass it around. This picture, the tumultuous picture, you've all seen it, probably. But it's 102 guys that just had their picture taken, movie night. And the first thing that they want to do, the moment that that picture is done, the picture has been snapped, it's time for everybody, you know, to walk away. Instead of walking away, they immediately pivot around on their heel, and whoever it is that they are next to is who they want to talk to, even if they've never met him before. Because people have learned that they can trust what shows up, that we are consistent in that way. We don't have to worry about the guy next to us, that he's suddenly going to turn into something hideous that we really need to get the hell away from. The joy inherent in this picture really speaks for us as a culture, and to me, this is the perfect ideal of what social ecstasy is. So let's talk about ecstasy, period. What we're going to do is we're going to go to the whiteboard, we're going to be printing, and we're going to take our... Okay, here we go. Let's take a nice dark color. There you go. And so then what I'm going to do is I'm going to call upon people to talk, to give words that to them speak of ecstasy within your own life. I know it's a weird thing to say, but if you've ever had an absolutely transcendent experience, sexually, socially, interpersonally, relationship-wise, whatever, any adjectives that you would use to describe that experience, could we use them, please? So we've got, obviously, ecstasy, which unfortunately for a lot of people is aligned with, say, a particular drug. And as you guys know, I have my opinions on that, but I'm open to debate on that. But I'm going to use the word, let's say, passion. Okay. Write it down.
Best
spelling now. All right, Pete. Oh, okay. Maybe you should solicit him. I'm the guy who won the spelling bee statewide, fourth grade through eighth grade. Okay. So here we go.
That's
okay. That's fine. So you pay attention. You point at people. People raise your hands. Help them out. Help our Tommy.
Connectedness.
Very good.
Presence. Give him a second.
Okay, when you say presence, as long as I'm writing down, tell us what that means to you.
Being present, just in the moment.
In the moment.
Trust. Being able to trust the people that you're with, that you can let down your guard and just be who you are no matter what.
Very good. Thank you. I mean, we don't have to do thousands of them. I mean, if that's
contact.
All. Contact. How would you define that?
Well, kind of physical and emotional, kind of both.
Freedom. Very good.
Euphoria where you're
existing. I love it. Euphoria.
No worries.
No worries. Let's continue. Oneness, nice. I love that. I vote for that one. Pardon?
Uninhibited.
Uninhibited. Love it. What's
submission.
That? Submission. Interesting. Yeah, these are all things that we can definitely be talking more about. Okay.
Enjoyable.
Enjoyable.
Joyful.
Joyful. Thank you. Yeah, you're going to have to repeat it.
Playful.
Lighthearted, maybe? I'll say that one.
Intensity.
Okay, just right. Intensity.
Lust?
Yes.
Nice. Okay, there was one that I missed.
Lust or must?
Lust.
Right.
Any others? No Okay, so let's go through these, you know, because everybody covered them very quickly, very nicely. And it relates back to my original premise for the series. Remember, this is the fourth part of a four-part series. The original concept was supposed to be how to train a boy within the larger context of how to be an effective top, which has been the long multi-month arc of this series of discussions. However, the change that occurred to me in the midst of all this is what I was really talking about was actually interpersonal communication. One-to-one, one-to-many, whatever. But what we're really talking about is what we yearn for as primates. You know, we're hungry for connectedness. Okay? So I'm going to take a quick picture of this real quick for purposes of documenting it for later. Just a moment. Okay, and smile, and there we go. Okay, do we have an eraser in it? Yes, we do. Okay, so we'll get back to that. Start erasing, please. Okay, what we're going to do now is we're going to change the color of the ink, because that's important. But we're going to talk about the things that stop us from all this. What are the things that inhibit us from becoming ecstatic? Okay. Should we change colors? So let's have some words on words.
Fear. Worry.
Fear.
Untrust.
Worry.
Untrust. Distrust.
Family.
Distrust. What was that?
Family.
Oh, yeah. I think we can all tell stories about that.
Insecurity.
Yeah. Religion.
Okay, hold that thought. Tommy, you're going to have to help me on this one. I can't remember.
They're just saying
religion. Oh, I know, but you're going to have to be my member. Okay. Religion. What was the other one?
Shame.
Big time shame.
Self-conscious.
Self-abuse and self-hatred. I think, would SADs be up in there somewhere?
I'm sorry, what?
Self-hatred.
Self-hatred. Boy, I'm really not doing well today.
You can kill the self on the front of abuse.
Yeah.
Yes.
Somebody else's job.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. Being a big fan of self-abuse. Okay, keep going.
Guilt.
That's a biggie. All tied in with shame.
Uncertainty.
Thank you.
Judgment.
Now, how would you describe that? You say judging or judgment?
Judgment.
All right. Anything else?
Anger.
Anger. Really? How's that show up? Doesn't it ever? It's definitely a big blockage towards it.
Gossip.
Ooh, that's a nasty one. All right. Anybody else?
A good opinion of others.
Yeah. Other people's opinions.
Misconceptions.
Yeah, that one was a good misconceptions.
Thank you.
Or self-esteem.
Self-esteem. Misconceptions.
Misinterpretations.
Self-esteem.
So.
Right.
I think we can take that as a grant. The other one was misperception.
Yes.
Also ignorance.
Yeah.
You
know.
Poor communication.
Oh yeah, that's a big one. Poor communication.
Mm-hmm.
Poor his learner is supposed to be good.
Well, that sort of ties in with the whole shame aspect. And okay, self-consciousness. I guess I didn't finish that one. Societal pressure, you mean?
Yeah, like societal. That's
what I'm looking for. Social pressure. Who else?
Jealousy.
Ooh, baby. Otherwise known as insecurity. Depends on the timing. Yeah. All right, I accept that. Harm. Like I'm always telling people, I may hurt you. I may hurt you, but I will never harm you.
Addiction.
That one we definitely need to cover more about, but we'll talk more about that. What else?
Ill intent.
It's okay to yell it out.
Not two separate ones. They don't necessarily go together. Violence and entrapment.
Got it.
That's just a lot of entrapment.
Yeah, we're running out of room. Hey. Yeah. No lack of reasons to not have stuff. So what else we got?
Malice.
Interesting. All right. Anybody else?
Isolation.
Oh, this is a good one.
Exclusion.
Oh. Exclusion.
Depression.
Ah.
Is it depression?
Depression. I think this whole damn board is just loaded up with depression at the moment, isn't it? Okay. Oppression. That's a good one.
What's oppression?
Where somebody does it at you. Oh. Yeah. Suppression is a good one, actually. Suppression. Oh, damn it. I know, but it's too late. I've already messed it up. Okay, let's draw a line at it at this point.
Are you going to take a picture of it?
I certainly shall. I think, and I appreciate you reminding me because I am forgetful that way. Okay. Beautiful. Okay. So we're going to leave this depressing crap up here, and let's really talk about. So let's really talk about why it's so important that we have this discussion. What I'm going to add is stuff that doesn't show up on the board, and I'm pretty certain everybody here is going to agree with this. We have additional problems as gay men. We have decades of a fear of intimacy because it can lead to death, disfigurement, and disease. We fear each other. We fear intimacy. Not, I mean, this is all very good reasons here, but then we throw something else big and heavy on the pile. We can be all sad about it. We can be all droopy about it. And believe me, for decades we have been. The reason why I formulated the group the way that I did is so that we could just start over again. Because, the big fear that people have. See, we've got a topic coming up on male grief. I've gotten grief about it from several people already, saying, we can't talk about that. Oh, my God, why are we doing that? That's not appropriate. They're getting panicked. The reason why is because a lot of people, especially from my generation, are afraid that if we start talking about the grief that really lives with us, and has been for decades, then our hearts will be broken and we won't be able to deal with things anymore. We're maintaining. We're okay. We don't want to peel that scab off. Oh, fuck no. We don't want to see what's underneath it. I'm not saying this for drama. I'm not saying this for sympathy. I'm saying it because there is a wound in our community that causes us to separate. There's a burden on us as men, not gay men, not as Leathermen, but as men, which is that our society needs to keep us separate. You go to a family reunion, you go to a family wedding, there's a male over there as a satellite, there's a male over there as a satellite, there's a male over there as a satellite, and where are the women and the children? In many, many places. Solar system, in the middle. And the males are separated from each other. They don't have a lot to do with each other in many family structures. We are not to be trusted. We are kept away from the young because we are a bad influence. You talk to young, straight fathers of children, and you ask them a very uncomfortable question, and you say, has anybody already tried to separate you from your children? A lot of the time they'll say, actually, yes, and they're surprised. I said, it gets worse as you get older, because males are suspect. We are a problem, because we cannot be trusted with children. Only women have the right coach children, to have an influence upon their opinions. And we've accepted that as a culture. So we've got that additional burden that doesn't show up on the board. So we got all this shit hanging off of us. The reason why we've been so successful as a group here in Fetishman, San Diego, is because we've started over again. Where we just start from acceptance. Where we don't worry about all that crap that we've all had dragging along behind us like a dead burro on the end of a rope. It's got its hooves up in the air and it smells like nasty, but everybody wants to pretend it's not there. Well, we can spend a lot of time crying about it. We can wallow around in our pity pool, which we've been doing for too goddamn long. Or we can recognize that in the time that since all of this started with the sorrow of AIDS, I'll say the word, that in that time, two new generations have risen up, and they desperately need all of us together to find reasons to love each other, to accept each other, to trust each other, to actually start finding reasons to bond with each other, not just as, you know, hey, hot fucking man, but also as friends, as lovers, as grandsons, as nephews, as loving uncles, as granddaddies, as I'm always saying. What we're doing is we're attracting more and more of the classic leather man, and we're attracting more of the up-and-coming talent, and everybody in between. And the reason why we're attracting and retaining people is because we're coming from authenticity all the time. During these talks, everyone's being very honest. We're about to enter into another phase, starting with the one where we talk about male grief, where it's going to get deep. It's going to get hardcore deep. We're going to go real, real intense on that section. It'll be for a few sessions. But the reason why is that the last time we did this, it caused huge, massive, valuable, and very positive change in our local society. The guys who shared the most were the ones who gained the greatest benefits. If there's some burden that you've been dragging along in your life, this is a good time to let go of it. With dedicated listeners, what I want to warn you that, yes, it's going to be uncomfortable for the people who are doing it, but the more you put into it, the more you get out of it. And that's true of the process of life as well. The reason why I guide people through this periodically, why we do this, you know, every 6 or 8 months or whatever the hell the interval is because we can't stay that heavy all the goddamn time. Sometimes we have to lighten it up. Sometimes we have to turn into pure educational stuff. But sometimes it's important for us to find reasons to love each other. As I've said before, it's the opposite of the courtship situation. See, with courtship, you're always turning the shiny side towards each other. And always afraid that if he finds out what you're really like, then he's going to reject you, so you better keep it quiet until you finally got that ring on your finger, and then you let him see what the real side of you is. Sometimes we call that the truthfulness speed bump, which is why many relationships break up right around that point, because people weren't ready for the truth when it showed up. As opposed to with this group, by us sharing authentically, by sharing from the heart, by being absolutely passionately true, what happens is we've had massive numbers of couples meet here and bond with each other and stick around. And that's a huge blessing. That a lot more play is happening, a lot more closeness. So let's talk about specific examples. Pick something on this board, and I want to hear from somebody. Tell me you're going to be the microphone stand. Yeah. So you go up behind people and you just keep the only problem here is the clinky clanky, so you're just going to hold it in your hand because this here is going to make a lot of background noise.
Okay.
All right.
So, everyone
picks up all the houses for.
I wanted to start with one general comment about it. The one thing you don't see on that board is death, because you won't see death on there because that's the freedom from everything else on that board. That's what you don't have to deal with any of that. On that board, if you're
is that a good thing?
Well, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying that it's freedom from all of that. So, I guess I say it from the perspective of having lost, you know, like you, I've lost dozens of friends through a couple of waves, right?
But then, technically, were they your friends if they didn't like you after what you told them?
No, I lost them to death. I lost them to death.
Yeah.
So. But and sometimes I wonder if they aren't better because they don't have to deal with that board. So
it'd be great to be able to ask them.
I think
you know,
issue for
first. I suppose.
I agree with that too, because I lost my dear closest friends from my 20s a long time ago. And so what I try to do now is, because they're gone, I try to live my life for me, but also kind of bring them along with me. And I think we all do that. But yeah, it's a great loss.
So we kind of have to live for us and them too.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. Hold that thought, please. Take your boots off. A lot of clunking. Okay, what you were saying, yes.
You know, I was thinking fear of death actually, in some ways, is a motivator. And you were kind of hinting at it in the last meeting. You reach a certain age and you realize you've only got one life to live. Yeah. Go for it. And, you know, I think that if you just become complacent, you can lose your chance to reach ecstasy or stay in this set of words.
Very good. Thank you. Very good. Good job. Thank you.
Does anybody else have any thoughts? You're not related to anything on the board.
Well, in terms of the death, I always feel like I've been abandoned.
Yeah. A lot of survivor guilt?
Yeah, not survivor guilt, but I've been abandoned and he left me. Mm-hmm. And he deserted me. That's how I feel.
Do you still feel that way?
No. I did for a long time.
Now, for the benefit of you younger guys, and there's quite a few, who here is under the age of 25? Show of hands.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. And anybody else who's not specifically from the generation that lost the 19th? Yes.
I actually, what I noticed in my coming out and, you know, in the 90s, when I mean, it was just after AIDS and all of generation was lost, there wasn't really any people to look up to. No role models, no mentors. If there were, they were considerably older and or very far and few between. And quite often you found those. Well, especially in bars, they were the most drunk ones there because, of course, they're drowning their sorrows in beer and whatnot. But it was kind of, it was fucked up for our generation as well, just behind them.
How old are you?
I'm 47. It came out in 1990.
Is there anybody here who came out, before 1980? As a gay man? And obviously things have changed. And, you know, we're not going to go too super deep into it. This is a topic that we can go into very, very deeply as time goes by, you know, when we're ready to go into the deeper stuff. But the point I want to make about all this, thank you. I noticed that we've been coming up with stuff that's not on the board, which means obviously there's a lot more. And we could spend an awful lot of time on the individual stuff. But isn't it awesome how many reasons we have to not be close? It's sad from an individual level, it's sad from a cultural level, it's sad from many different directions. So we can cry about it. We can grieve about it, we can suffer, we can feel self-pity, we can do what I call slow-motion suicide, of heading down the downward death spiral of drugs, 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 party, 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 drink, drink, drink. Show of hands, this is entirely unofficial, but how many people here are in recovery? Show of hands. Right. Yeah. It's not accidental. I think we can all give very, very good reasons why that is so in our culture. We stuff our feelings, we self-medicate, we do all this other stuff. It's tragic, tragic, tragic. Drama, 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 downer, downer, downer. Instead, what this talk is really about is celebrating what actually happened, what actually showed up. The reason why I say it is because what we have here is precious. Somebody once described these fetishmen men's discussions as AA without the AA. You know, take that as you wish, in that we actually are here for each other. it's very important for us to feel like we're part of something larger than ourselves, to feel like we're part of some sort of cultural construct that gives a good goddamn about whether we live or die, whether we're okay or not. Yes, please.
I grew up in the Deep South, and my family was not just Southern Baptist, but primitive Southern Baptist.
How would you define that?
Seven layers below the gates of hell, to be honest. And if I would have had something like this growing up, my life would have been so transformed in a completely different way, on a completely different path. I feel such kinship with the people who are here that it just, I look forward to coming, to be quite honest, because I haven't gotten so many hugs from so many different people in my entire life, even when I was going to church. But the men don't hug anybody there. Yeah. Only the women would hug me. And although it was nice, there was no connectivity with anybody. In fact, I was counseling with the pastor for many, many years about being homosexual. He was trying to de-gay me. And then I was approached by the mothers of the church saying that I was gay and that I wasn't allowed to be around any of the children any longer because they were scared that I was going to do something inappropriate.
Yeah. And it's horrible, horribly wounding, isn't it?
It's beyond wounding.
This is a heavy topic. It can get much heavier. Yes.
I was looking at the list, and I think there's like two, I mean, this is my opinion, but there's like two categories on it. One is symptoms, and the other are inputs. And there's a lot more symptoms out there, in my opinion, than inputs. But, you know, you have a lot of symptoms, but you have very few inputs, like just the family, religion, abuse. You have some violence and entrapment. You have some, social pressure.
Like external.
Externals coming at you, you know. So many externals coming at you. But the rest of it, I mean, not all of it, but and I'm sure you could grow both lists, but the rest of it is what comes out of you or how you respond to that. I'm not saying either is wrong. It's just there's not that many inputs, but they're very powerful. Very powerful. And all of them are valid. It's about it.
Yeah. Here's the thing. As a culture, we're taught not to be the captains of our own ship. We're taught to be victims of circumstance. We're taught to be at the effect of everything around us. What we're doing with this group is we're encouraging people to be more responsible, not just for themselves, but for each other. That's part of the reason why there's so much joy, because responsibility, as I've said before, is not a burden. It's not a gun to the head. By us taking responsibility for each other, by being childlike, playful, joyful, affectionate, frisky, trusting, accepting, all these lovely words that were on the board before, there's a lot more. You know, I haven't looked at the picture, but you know, I'm just sort of quoting from memory. In order for us to get to ecstasy, we have to work our way through the processes. We have to leave our burdens by the side of the road. A lot of us have in this room. I'm not going to point at anybody in particular, but over the last 2.5 years, I think it's November, it'll be 3 years that we've been doing this. Almost continuously, every single week, the entire time. But the reason why we've been doing it is it's been an ongoing project to help people get past what holds them back. One of the topics we had long before we started recording was, what are the things that hold me back? And boy, we had some severe stories. But the people who shared the most were the ones, as I said, who left those things by the side of the road. And we're going to keep doing that. We're going to have light stuff. We're going to have heavy stuff. Tonight is going heavier than I expected. And that's okay. That's just the direction that it needs to go. It's not scary. It's not wrong. It's not broken. The reason reason why I have no trouble with this. I'm not sure if I even brought my glasses up, but that's very good. Thank you. I made it a nice big pot, and I still can't breathe. But the reason why we're having this pot is we have to acknowledge where we've been in order to move into the next part. And what we're really talking about on that board, really, has to do, what I assert, it has to do with an absence of trust. Because if somebody is shaming us, laying guilt upon us, if they're judging us, that's not a person who has our best interests at heart. That's a person who's trying to manipulate us into stopping doing what we're doing and being the way that they want us to be. Perhaps that's healthy in some cases, but I think we all can give very good examples of why that's really not always good. We've had a lot of shit laid on us. We've had a lot of shoulds thrown at us. There's one, you know, as I'm always saying, the whole reason why they came up with the name of the client is great is because the opposite of shame is pride. Saying, I renounce the culture of shame that I was raised with. Heavily religionated. I mean, show of hands, how many people here grew up in a very heavily religious environment? And, you know, rhetorical question. Did it really prepare you for the life you're living now? And it just, yes.
Just about everyone, there's a sense of emotional imprinting that comes where you are conditioned to behave or not behave in a certain way. And it's usually done with a sense of discipline. You're either spanked or put on timeout, whatever. It isn't like the culture today where the kid can pick up the telly and call human services or child services and say, my parents did whatever.
Yeah.
Before you were beaten into submission, the experiment for me is to heal those wounds from childhood and be able to explore myself and allow myself to go one step further and go beyond self through the experimentation and play of BDSM. So in some cases, PTSD is a big part of a lot of young men's story, be it violence inflicted on them by parents for discipline and or being raped as a young man, depending on what the situation was. It is most unfortunate that I've had the experience of both. And for me, it is an extreme test to trust someone, not only to engage me, but to allow someone to hold me most intimately. That's probably been the toughest wall and the easiest wall that I've let go, just because of the energy of the group and the way the guys, they're very open-hearted. They make you feel safe. You made me feel safe. From the moment I met you, you made me feel safe. And when you latched on to that first tug, I was like, oh, what the fuck is going on here? Okay? And then it was what you said that put me at ease, made me relax, made me feel welcome, and that I was in the right place at that very moment. The reason I came back was because I needed to learn more. It was like, you know, the donkey and the fucking carrot. Okay? And so through this process in the last 6-8 months, I've also asked my dear friend, my sponsor, to come, because I don't know how to talk about sex in the many forms that I want to explore, but I want to explore them safely. I don't, it's like I saw that self-harm. Self-harm is a big part of acting out as a coping skill, be it cutting, scalding, allowing things to happen to you that you wouldn't normally do. And most of those wounds are self-inflicted. But the funny thing is the psychological scars that I'm trying to tear down those barriers and just be a bit more free. So that first opportunity where I actually said, so would you please give me my first taste of and explain to you what the deal was, the kindness and intimacy and gentleness that you showed with me, it was very nurturing, but it was also very freeing. It left that taste in my mouth of desiring more, and I never saw that coming. You know, being black and all, I ain't thinking about somebody whipping me on my back and slavery and all that shit. I mean, that fucking happened.
A lot of cultural resonance there.
Okay, yeah. But that's the drama from, you know, that's just what you're indoctrinated with. So how do I system override that and allow pleasure to exist? And you are very, I have to give you, Papa, you got skills. You do. And I like the fact that you were willing to be heartfelt. Instead of, I don't know, some people suffocate you with their mind. But you came from the heart, and that's what made me feel safe. So, anyway, sorry about that.
Thank you. Rhetorical question. How much of any of the stuff written and read on the board do you feel in this room right now? Rhetorical question. Obviously not. The reason why is because what we've been doing with people creating a sequence of guaranteed safe spaces. The way I describe it is you land on soft cushions instead of broken glass, that even if you only show up once a year, you can always count on the result. You can always count that people are going to treat you the opposite of shallow. They're going to treat you well. That if things aren't going to go wrong, I mean, if things are going to go wrong, that there's going to be people responsible who will make sure that it doesn't go any further than a certain point. Because we give a damn about each other. Because one of the premises that I had in one of my previous talks was that I was trying to figure out, why is it we never have bad things happen? You know, why are things not driving off into the weeds? It's because people are so invested in keeping things the way that they are, they don't want to be the one who fucks it up. Because if everybody's getting their goodies, if everybody's getting respected, if everybody's being treated as a really valuable, you know, useful and attractive and joyful and wonderful playful friend, who want to fuck that up? You know, it's really where we're coming from. And that's why we're doing it the way that we are. So let's get back on my notes here. So let's review the previous three talks and how it relates to tonight. Okay. Establishing trust. That's an active process. It's not something you leave random. It's not something that you, you know, hope is going to happen. Hope is not a very active verb. You have to establish it constantly. Establish commonality and trust and be able to have the desired result every single time. Not just culturally, but individually. Because, like I said, if you don't feel safe, you're never going to be able to get off your guard. You're going to, I mean, you're going to constantly be, hold this please, you're going to be in what I call fighting lobster stance. What did you mean? Wait a second, what's that? That's it, I'm out of here. I call a lot of the men of my generation timid woodland creatures. Because they may all be all butch and macho and, you know, covered in leather and all the rest of that stuff. But the moment the drama rears its ugly head, that's it, I knew it. And they're gone and they will never return. Because we've had too many instances in the past. During the years when everybody was in deep, deep, deep grieving, we clawed at each other in our sorrow, in our fear, in our survivor's guilt, in our unresolved rage. And things went really bad for a long time, so the guys in their 40s now didn't have the really good role model that they really deserved and really, honestly, you know, it should be the default position. Everybody deserves to have stable, happy, complete role models. Well, it hasn't been happening. Well, we can cry about it, or we can do something about it now. The way that we're able to do that, establishing trust, we have to start from zero. We have to start from ground level, saying, how nice are you? Yes.
I just have to say this to Ricky. You have... What happened for me was that you allowed me to be exactly where I was at. Mm-hmm. And then you nurtured that. So I just was where I was, but there was an openness that allowed me to, it shifted my perception. Mm-hmm. Because not everything we think is true. Okay, good, bad, or indifferent. It's really how we perceive it that makes it not so, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that's not an original thought. It's just an observation and something I learned in a textbook that I have to be mindful of what I think and what I ask for. Mm-hmm. Because I have to be specific. Especially in this type of play, you have to be specific in not only what you want, but what you don't want. Because otherwise you fuck around and get hurt. Mm-hmm. And that's the awareness that you brought to light for me, to be very careful, because there are people in these different places that you do not like, where people go to meet people who wind up being destroyed. Mm-hmm. Because there are, I'm not going to say evildoers, but, you know.
People who may not have your best intentions at heart.
Thank you.
Hmm. Yes.
One of the subjects that I actually wanted to ask y'all about and talk about is, when you're going through those points in your life where people were talking down on you, telling you the way you were supposed to live your life and do the way the things you're supposed to do and all that, you know, and you felt all this stuff that's on the board. One of the things I want to ask y'all is, what made y'all not let this consume you? What made you stubborn? You know,
survival instinct. Self-preservation. Yeah.
You're bigger than that.
And I think, too, I think not only survival, I think it's survival, and I don't know how to explain this, but back in 1984, my two best friends, and if y'all been in San Diego for a long time, you probably know this person, John McQuillan, used to be Miss Dollar 98, wrote for the Update and all this stuff. My very dear best friends. He and my other best friend died within 6 months of each other of AIDS. I was positive at the same time that they were. I survived. I'm still here 28-something years later. And it was like I was making the comment before where they're gone, been gone for 20-something years. But I'm still here. And I, for a long time, I wondered, okay, the three of us were, you know, the three musketeers. Why are they gone and why am I still here? And I've lived with that for over 20-something years, wondering why am I still here? You know, I'm positive, but, you know, not detectable, you know, all those wonderful things. But it's like, I have to live my life now for those two also. Yes. And, but it's still a lot of those things on the board, you know, you question yourself. It's like, why am I still here? Why didn't I go 6 months after the, you know, the last one? Right. And so that's kind of always on your mind. It's always why. And self-preservation to, you know, to stay here.
Now, for y'all, is there like certain coping mechanisms or something that y'all do that helps bring the self-esteem back up, picks y'all self back up? Because I know I'm only 20 years old. There's been, most of my life I've been by myself, and I've had to teach myself, you know, when I've been down and when I've been told that I'm, you know, a worthless piece of crap or something, I've had to pick my own little ways to pick myself back up and get myself back in the right motion.
The best way to do it is with other friends, whether they're survivors. If they're survivors too, then that helps, but with other friends and not dwelling on it. You know, you have to keep going, you know. I'm, you know, like my doctor I've been going to for 28 years, and he says, Ron, you're going to die of, you know, natural causes, you know. Mm-hmm. So I believe him. And it's like, okay, fine, I'll have a heart attack or just friggin' die in my sleep of old age. Mm-hmm. So I don't dwell on it anymore, other than, like I said, it's like, why out of those three am I still here? So it must be a reason, whether it's God's got a mission for me or whatever it is, there's got to be a reason I'm still here. And I don't want to screw that up because I'm still here for those two. And thousands of others mm-hmm. that have died in San Diego since 78. And Papa Tony knows, we know a lot of the same people that are gone. So.
And, yes, you were going to say.
Well, I guess, you know, there's the past. In my house, if you walk around in it and you look at things, what you see is a collection of all the people that have gone. I have mementos of all the people I've lost because they were that close, and I just have it around my house. because that keeps them close to me. But there's the present, so the people that are in my life now and have been in the last 10 years or so that are super important to me. And there's no age defined by any of that either. I mean, they're all ages. It doesn't matter. And then there's the future, and you're the future. And you symbolize that. And it's important on all those three levels. So I think it's harder for you to see the future because they're still 10 years old. But you know what? They're out there. And so you sort of have to grab all three and live all three. And really what you're doing is you're living for yourself. But you have to touch all of it and keep it all present at the same time.
And learn from the past as
you go through the future.
Go for it, Jack.
You need to surround yourself with positive people. And as soon as possible, let go of the negative people. Just surround yourself with positive people.
Yeah.
And that will...
One of the things that I say is that I wasted a lot of time in all of my grief, my unresolved rage, and all the survivor's guilt, and all the rest of that stuff. I lived with my life, I mean, with my head turned around 180 degrees on my shoulders, looking towards the past. The way I would describe the men of my generation for a long time, and for many it's still true, is that we're laying at the bottom of a deep hole, 6 feet deep, waiting for somebody to kick dirt over us. Another metaphor, it's a stinging one, but for a long time I felt like a pterodactyl surrounded by small furry mammals that I couldn't relate to. And a lot of nodding heads amongst us older guys. The fact of the matter is, though, that that is very, very, very short-sighted. And that's why our group is doing so well, because we're attracting guys like you and retaining you because we do have a function in this world. And that relates to tonight's topic, really. I am going to bring this home, I promise. It's a long stretch, but I'm going to do it. Because, yes, we need our youth. Yes, we need the new shy people. Yes, we need the guys who are ready to, you know, show up and start participating. Yes, we do need all that. But the family reunion needs Kinky Grandpa, too.
Yeah.
We need you back. We love you. We want you back. We miss you. And we need to have you as our loving uncle. That's the role to have in 2013 and beyond. To quit sorrowing. To quit thinking only about the past, because all around you is blessings. All around you is the people who are adding immense value. We're living it every day in our group. But in order for us to do that, though, we have to start with trust. We have to, and that relates back to the first part. But the trust has to happen in a whole bunch of different ways because different generations have different issues. People have different needs. But the way to get past feeling sorry for ourselves is to focus upon others who have needs greater than ours. We need to reach out to the guys with the big hearts. We're at their prime. 48, you say? 47. For Gay Leatherman, that's fucking perfect. Roof. Yeah, 47-year-olds. We have a real good use for them. But the larger culture, the larger gay culture doesn't. The larger gay culture says, you know, if you don't look like, you know, if you can't maintain a look like a 23-year-old, why are you still bothering us? So we have to renounce that. We have to let go of that. That everybody is sexually attractive in our own special and wonderful and unique ways. If we were all only attracted to one thing, then there'd be a 10,000-mile-long line of people waiting to have sex with the one item of desire. And that isn't exactly how it works. Everybody's got somebody that's a fan of theirs. What our purpose of the group is to find reasons for us to like each other and to play with each other and maybe expand our viewpoints a little bit, too, and be open to new possibilities. In order to have trust, we have to have all of us. You'll notice one thing very unique about our pictures. We don't look like any other gay Leatherman's group or Fetishman's group on Earth. Not even close. We're way beyond that. We're decades beyond that. You might notice that. Anybody have any stories to share about that? I'm seeing a lot of nodding and a lot of acknowledgement. Has anybody had exposure to other kinky groups that may differ from this one? for it, John.
Just as an example, not to name names or anything, but just an experience I had with, there was, they were having, it was like they were talking a whole different language with, when they were talking about procedure and this person entitled this, entitled that, they, you know, they had everything, it was so intricate, so much, it was like trying to follow someone talking in a completely different language. They, you just would, you know, and just the way that they interacted with each other, and you know, everything had to be staged, and everything had to be planned, and everything had to be so coordinated down to the last little, you know, little thing, that you know, you just looked at it, and it was like you were looking at people from another planet or something, because there was no possible way you could relate to or get anywhere close to what they were talking about unless you had been around for 10 years.
One of the things that's not on the board is the concept of distancing mechanisms. You hear me use that all the time. It's a way of stiff-arming people, saying, not now, I'm really not looking for you, you know, but I'm going to politely pretend that you're not there. That's a distancing mechanism. I'm going to dress so ferociously that you're going to be intimidated. That's another one. We have this arcane protocol that you don't know, and chances are very good you never will, because none of us is going to tell you. That's another way of keeping people at a distance. And it all implies we don't trust you. Why should we? You're going to have to prove yourself to us. You're going to have to climb this ice wall of our indifference. And I'm not saying that that's the case in that particular case, but I've seen it. You know, I've been around a long time.
This was happening at an event that was supposed to be for newcomers and beginners.
Yeah, and it didn't feel like it at all.
No, you had no clue that, oh, okay, I'm supposed to know all this beforehand. Like you had to go read a bunch of, like, you know, Leather Clubs for Dummies books, just so you could understand what the hell they're talking about.
They're referring to Old Guard.
I'm sorry, speak up.
They're referring to Old Guard.
Could be. Guard. Let's hear your experience.
There is a book called SM-101 that will teach you that stuff, but it's very dry and boring. It's not like this.
Yeah.
It's not life.
It's so boring, I guess.
People get so caught up in the protocol. People get so caught up in the little dance. Actually, it really is break time. How about we go ahead and take a 10-minute break? We're going to come back in at whatever the hell, 10 minutes from now on. This is definitely going to run late tonight, because we started talking about what stops us, and boy, didn't we have a lot to share, and that's okay. But we have to know what it is that we're working against in order to have trust. Like I said, if we don't talk about this stuff, if we don't deal with it, if we don't share our experiences with it, how are we going to get to the next step, which is trust, which is the opposite of what you're seeing on the board there? We can't skip the steps. Okay, in terms of training a boy, back to the original four-part arc, we talk about finding a partner. Well, this works on an interpersonal level no matter what. Either in terms of relationships, but also in terms of culturally. Because we have to find out what we're all into, what it is that we like, what pleases us, and what our limits are. Because really, tonight's topic of achieving ecstasy, really what's going on is we're taking responsibility for each other's pleasure and pushing each other to new heights. Finding out what our old limits were and pushing past them. That's where kinky people really do succeed, is by being supportive of each other in getting to new levels. Again, I make the assertion that kink has always just been extreme intimacy. And by supporting each other and getting better and better at it, in getting closer, in getting more goodies for each other. Really, that's how it works when it works really, really well. And that has to do with relationships, like I said, or as a community, or as daddy, sir, you know, boy, slave, whatever, you know. So, getting back to it. So, as far as, I don't want to breeze past too much, but the concept of finding the buttons. How are we going to know what it is that each person is into, unless we actually ask, unless we actually have that conversation, unless we really get to the point of saying, you know, I give it to you about your answer. Please give it to me. I honor whatever it is. And that's a whole different communication than just
Now, hold still. I'm going to violate you now.
You know, I mean, we can play that game. It's a good game. But it's not a good 24-7 type thing. A lot of guys get stuck on the 24-7 concept. And it's a lovely fantasy. And there's times where it doesn't necessarily work. I mean, we've all seen it. We've all had examples of it in our lives. But sometimes you got to let the pendulum swing. In order to do that, though, we have to have the trust that if we do that, then we're not going to lose status in some way, either culturally or with the guy that, you know, who's our slave, you know, let's say, where he's not going to think less of me if I do something really, really silly and we're, you know, collapsing giggles during the very intensive play session, that we have to have that flexibility. Okay. On the concept of training, let's go right down to what training really is all about, part three. It has to do with responsibility for each other, saying, I'm going to take the time to invest in somebody who needs to know something. And I know that thing, and now I'm going to teach someone else how to do it. I'm going to make sure that he learns it so that someday when he has a gray beard, then he's going to be glad to teach somebody else in his stead. Because that's how it works when it works well. That's how it works on a, you know, on an ape level, you know. That we pay it forward because it works. It's cooperation. It's the golden rule. But getting back to ecstasy, getting back to stage four, you know, and this is all arbitrary. It's just a construct I came up with or somebody taught me 30 years ago, and it's been so long I don't remember. But really what it's all coming down to is we've taken the time to break down the shields, break down the baggage, break down everything on that board, and leave it behind and get to the good stuff. I'm going to repeat what I said. You can't skip past the steps. And that includes doing drugs that are meant to cover over the fact that you don't have the trust, that you don't have the connectedness. You know, we'll be talking more about drugs, the pros and the cons and all that, and we'll cover that very thoroughly. I'm very open to what is being said about, you know, say, mushrooms and things like that. I really want to hear a lot more about that. Because that's not been part of my experience, and I'd like to hear that voice. That'll be coming up. But for tonight, what I'm talking about is what we're all familiar with, which is the bad side. I know many of us have seen it in large amounts. I know that I have. That what happens is when people are using drugs as a way of stuffing their feelings, as a way of self-medication, as a way of trying to get past their painful shyness and the you know, the terror that they have of connecting with people that they need so badly that they're willing to cut past everything and do something that they would normally never logically do in order to try and get connected with other people. And you've seen it, I've seen it. And as I've said before, I don't want that in my life. I would rather work to gain connectedness with other people. I would rather invest the time in something. One of the things that I've been making an assumption people already know, that in my own particular life, if I take on somebody as a trainee, it's not a one-time thing. It's not a light, airy, you know, let's just do it because we've got nothing else to do type thing. If I take on somebody, it means something. It's a huge investment. I mean, I think we all know I'm a pretty busy man. But the reason why I do it, why I take people under my wing on different levels, on different, you know, in different amounts of commitment and all the rest of that. I mean, I'm committed to everybody. But the people that I take on are the people that I really, really want to become closer friends with, who I really want to see someday in their turn be in my shoes, to be men of wisdom and experience who are willing to share it gladly and with an open heart and without editing. Because we need that as a culture. We need all of us together at our own levels, at our own pace, with our own capabilities, with our own strengths and our own weaknesses. We all have them. But the tools that are missing from my toolbox may be supplemented by you, and vice versa. As a culture, we need that. Not just on a play level, but on a human level. I don't know. As I'm always saying, human beings are troop monkeys. We're pack apes. We need to work ourselves, how to say it, in order for us to have group space, as I talked about, I think, last week. We've got
bottom space, we got top space, where somebody's really into what they're doing, and it's really powerful, and everybody's getting endorphinated, the energy's just going right through the roof. But in order to have group space, we have to do basically the same thing, but as a culture. That's why we've been able to do things such as the Flog Swarm, and I'm still in the process of negotiating the next one as far as location and time. You'll be hearing about it before anybody else. But in order for us to be able to have that, again, we have to work everybody through the processes. That's why I'm doing all this talking. It doesn't make my dick wet. It doesn't get me paid. The reason why I do all this talking, why we're doing the posting online, is because this gives me purpose in my life. It's a choice between doing this and being dead for me, because I saw no purpose in living. I've lost over 140 people in my life. That's when I stopped counting. I was going to two or three funerals a week. I felt useless in the world because my life had passed me by. Everyone that I had invested in was gone. And I grieved, but very incompletely, because I had nobody to grieve with. Because if I invested in somebody, they were just going to die like everybody else. It was very lonely, very isolated. And so then what I did is that I decided I was finding some purpose in my life. And that's why I do what I'm doing. Like I said, it's not an ego scratching for me, I promise you. If I lost 95% of my notoriety, I wouldn't miss it. I'm not doing this for awards. Anybody nominates me for the Nikki Awards, I always politely decline every year. I won't play that. My payoff is when I see you guys during the breaks and you are so full of joy and you're so glad and you're wagging your tails like crazy because you're around people that you love and that love you. And when we have big events, and oh, we have some big ones coming up, and everybody's on the same level, to me, that's my payoff. That's why I do what I do. To me, that is a form of ecstasy. I get high as a kite. I'm pumping out endorphins like a faucet. The reason why is because what I miss the most from the old days, the connectedness, the intergenerational relationships and responsibility for each other, where we take care of each other, that is what I have recreated with this group. This is what we used to have in the Leathermans tribe before everybody started dying. But what to me has to do with ecstasy is when we have these wonderful explosions of joy as a group. And it keeps happening. And you guys can count on it continuously happening. Yes, the group is going through changes as far as who's going to be doing what. Everybody's going to have different tasks. We're going to be changing patterns. We're going to be changing schedules. The calendar is going to be this way and that way. It's going to go through some lumpy stuff. What you can count on is I'm going to keep on doing what I do, which is to identify people like you and make sure that you stick around. Because I'm going to repeat it here. The guys that are in this room and the guys that are listening to this because they really need to listen to stuff like this are what I call the golden core. You've heard me say that before, maybe not recorded it. But in any group, the 10% of people who make 90% of the difference are in this room. The reason why our events, even in a noisy-ass, crowded bar full of drunken louts, why things never go wrong. Because the ones who have no idea what they're talking about, but they go, this is different. I think I better not pull my racket. Because this is different. Because everybody, we're so happy. We're so joyful. We swarm around each other like butterflies. And it's a different vibe. And the reason why we do that is because by talking about the burdens that we've left by the side of the road here, we're childlike. See, I think I told you guys, but I've raised six foster kids. I don't talk about it much. The majority of them, teenage males in crisis. That's been my specialty. If I had the patience to keep doing it, I would continue to do it, but unfortunately, I'm not in that place anymore. My youngest is 29 now. But the most important communication that I give him is that it doesn't matter where you came from. It doesn't matter what your history is. It doesn't matter about the capital S story. Everybody's got a story about why we should feel this way, why we should suffer from all this stuff on the board. We've all got really juicy stories. Fuck it. We're not our story. We've never been our story. Instead,
we can choose to show up the way that you guys show up in this room.
These are not toxic people. We all know how to be angry, evil, vindictive bitches, don't we? I know I do. And yet we choose not to.
Got a list of reasons. I mean, look at it on the board. My goodness, look at all those reasons. And yet we show up this way. That has been my lesson to these young men that I have mentored. I mentor a lot more than what I've mentioned. That just because you come from a bad beginning or some form of tragedy does not define you. It just forms your character. It forges your courage. It builds you as a man among men. It's what causes us to be the kind of men that have shown up here. These are really good men around you. This is your support system. This is who you were born to know and to be around. The people who are not in this room are not bad. They're not wrong. They're not broken. It just they haven't gotten to the point where you have yet. My hope for everybody is that anyone with a heart, anyone with a sense of hunger for more than what they have in their lives is going to find reasons to connect with others on the same level. So I'm now going to stop doing quite so much talking. We're going to open it up to discussion. And Tommy is the one you want to give his attention. So if somebody has something they want to share, then now is the time. So if you can relate to that, or I can I don't have the picture, but I'll... all the stuff that we said about ecstasy, we can talk about that. Major topic, ecstasy. Minor topic, crap on the board. So anybody has anything to talk about? Now is the time. I've done enough marbling. My, that was deep. Go for it.
Yeah, okay. Kind of a weird thought that's been recurring through the discussion about wild horses and training for, you know, horses that are tame. And you always have an image in my mind of a wild horse being free and ecstatic and, you know, having this feeling of freedom. Yet at the same time, you know, the horse that is tamed and socialized and they get comfort and, you know, their purpose and so on, and that they trust and all that. So there's this sort of like balancing between maybe trying to preserve some of your wild side and your instinct as an animal versus what you're socialized into. And I think, you know, what happens to a lot of people is that they're trained inappropriately. People don't know how to train in animals or people. They're not taught how to. So they make mistakes. And I think a lot of people suffer from that.
Okay, I've been going through a lot lately with the breakup and stuff like that, and relocating from Temecula to San Diego and buying a condo, all this kind of crap. And this group has been really good for me because I've been going through a whole lot of that stuff on that board. Some of you people that are on my Facebook and maybe saw my thing last night, I kind of got fed up with people telling me I shouldn't do this and I should do this, and I'm like, I'm 56 years old, I'm going to do what the hell I want to. But the most important thing that I wanted to make the comment about with a lot of that stuff that's on there and the stuff that was on the first board is this group has made me feel so good about myself and this new life, this new start that I'm going through. But I want to acknowledge these two guys right here because these are my two boys in training. They have life partners already, so it's not that. But I'm helping them to bring the boy out of here and see what it is they want. So these boys here kept me busy, kept me out of trouble, kept my mind going in the right direction. And I just want to thank them, but I want to thank this group, and especially Papa Tony. I'm looking forward to getting moved back down here and just get as involved with you guys as I can get.
As I've shared before, I think being able to share it's freedom. It's the ecstasy that we go for, because here it's a trusting space. It's a place non-judgmental, and that's why it all helps to get to that point of ecstasy and get rid of the crap, the fear and all that. There still is that. But it's if you can keep working at it and talking about it, it usually, for me, it feels better. And it
gets tuned down.
It gets tuned down, and the better stuff comes up, and the bad stuff goes down. If you keep the positive reinforcements and the sharing of other people with the same type of desires and the same kind of hang-ups, you know, and they're trying to get rid of the hang-ups, and it just works that way. And so that's why this is probably a pretty good subject tonight. And it could get a lot deeper with the death. I was like, this story, that was very moving, you know. It was a lot of history in the room, a lot of, I got some history, you know. It's like, wow. Yeah. I'll just say, yeah, Positive Sense 86, how do you make it? Well, you hang in there. It's luck. And you have a lot of decisions, too, the disease kind of drove a lot of decisions. Well, I'll stay in the Navy because they'll take care of me. And at first they said you only had 5 or 6 years, you're going to only make it. So then you make certain decisions throughout the whole way of how you live your life. You want to do good at work, then you want them to know you're gay. But it's certain things, you know, make you just get past it. And just some luck, friends, you certainly go through a lot of bad stuff, losing people, but you just go on. And try to be authentic and be in the moment and tell your own story, you know, share what's really going on with you, because if you hide it, then you know, you're just kind of downward spiral. And it's not healthy either for HIV people. It's not healthy, you know. I've never had trouble, but it's part of it, I think, is I try to be open and yeah. Stress, they say a little bit of stress goes a long way. It actually helps because it puts some friction or some it works with you. Yeah. You can't just have a stress-free life because you're gonna then maybe get
real bored.
That too. You have to keep it interesting. Yeah, yeah. You do have to keep it interesting.
A stress-free life is a dead person.
Yeah. But you also have to do things to release the stress when it's built up.
The gym and sex talk. There's a lot of stuff. Stuff to build up, be healthy.
What do y'all do to release y'all stress when y'all are so?
Find people you can talk to that'll actually listen to you and won't try and shut you down. You know, let people who actually let you get it out. Whether or not they agree with it is not important. What's important is that they let you talk about it and they try their best to relate to you and let you get your feelings out. And I mean, this group is a good place for that.
Oh,
and there's a lot of people in here that, you know. That the biggest thing that that I've run into over my life and that other people have experienced, kind of going back to what Ron was saying earlier, is, and also going back to what Papa Tony was talking about, is there's too many people that are so quick to just want to go, oh, drama, FYI, too much information, and they just want to shut you off right there. And those are not people that are your friends. Your real friends and people who care about you don't do that. They'll listen to you and let you get it out. And, you know, they may say, well, you know, some of that, you know, may not be the best way to handle it, and they may try and give you advice on better ways to do things. But they should at least let you validate what you have to say because you're feeling it. You know, if people who are constantly going like, no, that's not right, or, oh, no, that's drama, you shouldn't talk about that, or, oh, you're too open, you know, that's crap.
Well, you're needing that person to vent to, not that person to have major criticism against whatever that's going to come out.
Right, and that's what people rush to do, is they'll either, like Papa Tony was saying, they'll either run away right away as soon as the first sign of anything that's not, you know, everyone wants everything to be easy and breezy, and, you know, and it's all just going to be happy and light, and we can't have any sort of dark, deep discussion of any kind, because someone might feel something, you know, and that's not fun, and, you know, you got to get away from that. People have to learn to take the good with the bad, and people have to learn that if they want a friend, they need to be a friend.
Exactly. And, I mean, don't be afraid to slam your... Yeah, don't be afraid to slam your head against somebody when you're arguing with each other about a certain subject. If there's a certain way that you...
No, I'm just saying don't clack it.
Don't be afraid to... Confrontation of arguing with somebody. I mean, if you have a certain point that you want to get across or a certain way that you feel, don't hide who you are. Be who you are. It's that simple.
Yeah.
allow other people to have the space to be who they are, too.
Yes. I was heard this group is compared to like AA without the AA.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the reasons why I think the group works so well is because we kind of do the same things that we do in AA, basically talking about the steps. We admit that there's a problem. We say what the problem is. We tell other people. It's just exactly the same things we do in AA to kind of correct our lives, are what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
And although there's no God or whatever, there's definitely a kinship that is very similar to what I find in a 12-step program. Just because it's unselfish, it's helping others, and I think it brings some kind of God, if it's not ourselves, but together,
yeah, well,
with each other.
What you're describing a little bit is something that I look at and I've thought about for a long time is what you were talking about in the religious part is I look at that and I look at this group as being human. You know, we're here to help each other. We're here, you know, to get through the bad times, the good times. We've all had a rough past. So, yeah, I look at it as just being human.
Thank you, Tommy. So I just wanted to take a minute to share a little bit about just thinking about where I've been in the last year. So it's been about a year now that I've been coming to this group. It was late last summer. And I came in, I was very shy and very timid and very unsure. I really didn't know, is this for me or what am I getting myself into? I was very shy, and just in the course of a year, just the connection I've found with all of you, opening up more about my sexuality and exploring and playing and having fun at events, at Harness, at the demo nights, meeting Brian in this group. And then, you know, walking in the Pride Parade, I mean, talk about euphoric. And just the thousands of people just cheering and, you know, we're all geared up. I've got him on a leash, walking him down University and all the people cheering. And, I mean, that was a rush. And I don't know that I would ever have seen myself doing that even a year ago. I really don't think so. Like, wow, walking down the parade and geared up, and it's been a great time. And I'm so thankful for this group and all those experiences.
Relating back to the Pride Parade, there's something that you guys need to know that's coming up. There is a goal that is being shared by a lot of people. That this next Pride Parade is going to be a huge breakthrough, transformational, beyond belief. We had a lot of people in the Pride contingent this year. You look at the pictures from it, it's quite a few people. It's not just the quantity, it's the quality. The reason why he was comfortable and happy and people were sharing and happy and applauding and running up and wanting to be part of pictures, they weren't being treated like dancing monkey men, you know, entertaining, you know, the public. People were serene with each other. We're comfortable with each other. They like each other. Now multiply it by at least 10. Imagine 500 folks in gear marching in the Pride Parade next year. Largest contingent in the history of the Pride Parade. The purpose, see, it has to mean something. It's not enough to have numbers. Numbers don't mean anything. It's just numbers. But where it really turns into something transformational is that the information that really comes across to 150,000 people is not only, wow, look at all of them, but look how happy they are. These are not shameful, diseased, you know, scorned subculture. These are the guys who are the most admirable, respectable, lovable, and beautiful, and absolutely intimate and ecstatically joyful men. And women, there will be a lot of women in there too. We're going to have everybody that's kinky, not just from San Diego, but from all over Southern California joining us for this. And we're going to be supporting them too.
in November, first weekend in November, I think it is. It's the, yes, first weekend is the Palm Springs Pride Parade. Not Palm Springs Love Pride, which is the next weekend, but the Palm Springs Pride. They're asking us to come up and march with them. They will be providing free lodging. We're going to be doing ride sharing. I urge everybody to join us. Because if we're going to ask them the favor of showing up for our stuff, it's kind of courteous to go in the other direction as well. Because we're extending the brotherhood everywhere, in lots of different directions, for lots of different end results, but the purpose is always the same. We're not just informing the people who are in this particular tribe. We're informing the larger tribe. We're going to, this last year, I mean this last Pride Parade, we led on the news. Not because we looked like a bunch of freaks, but because we were just so serenely happy. You look at the video clips from the news feeds from the Pride Parade, and the first thing they show is us, not as a bunch of weirdos, but as in, look at them all. Isn't that interesting? Look how happy they are. They're all grinning with all the teeth in their head. You know, you can count the teeth. They're just so happy. And it's really authentic smiles because everybody's happy. They're serene with each other. Now imagine having it be huge. See, I spoke to the folks with the Pride committee, you know, and I said, so legally, what is the largest contingent that's allowed? And they said, really, there's no upper limit as long as everybody stays together. Well, several different businesses had huge, huge contingents like Sony and Qualcomm and things like that. Well, we can do far better than that. And so that's why I'm asking is that everybody consider being a part of this. I invite you. This is the dream of a bunch of us. Ron and Eli and Aaron and James are all behind this as well. We're all taking this dream together because it has the possibility of utterly transforming the conversation about what it is the kinky people really are about. We can have people start questioning whether or not we should be hidden away during the realm because we're the only place in the whole the whole Pride Festival that is hidden away behind black plastic. Why? You know, I can see checking IDs, but, you know, who is it that we're really protecting from the unsightliness of it all? We're not doing anything all that crazy. And if there is something like flogging going on, then yes, it's over there, you know, it's inside of a tent off to the side. That's fine, you know, but in the meantime, why are we hiding? Why is it that it has to be such a trial to find it? When we have a lot more political clout, not as something to use like a stick to beat people with, but as a way to have a new conversation, to say, you know, for a long time people have been treating us as suspect. Why is that? It's 2013. We all know what we do. It's not a mystery. It's all over the internet. Why don't we have that conversation now? Because we don't have to live in ignorance anymore. We don't have to go through all this crap anymore. We're not subject to it anymore. Let's have a new discussion. So I invite you guys to think about that. Because what he was describing was basically us happy together in public. That's really all it was. You don't even have to be all that geared up. You know, we're not looking for $3,000, you know, outfits. But, you know, armband, harness, you know, wristband, whatever. Something that shows I am part of a tribe. Not as in, pass or fail, you're not going to be allowed to be part of us if you don't, but it's a way, like I said, it's human society is becoming more tribal. We're getting goths, we're G-O-T-H-S, we're getting rockabillies, we're getting, steampunkers. There was a big convention of steampunkers over in Normal Heights recently. I had no idea, but didn't they have the best outfits? Oh my God. You know, we're becoming more and more fractionated, and I see that as a healthy thing, that we're getting away from the monoculture, where everybody's expected to fit into the same box. Now people are self-identifying as being part of a neighborhood, being part of a community of some sort, and that, to me that's healthy. What makes us different in this group? Are you raising your hand?
I was going to say something about
community,
because, like,
speak up.
Like, you said about community, like, supposedly, like, community posts that everyone talks about, that, you know, like, on my neighborhood, like, where I'm living, yeah. Basically, like, I, you know, when I was a little kid, no one really talks to anyone like in the neighborhood. Like no one, like everyone's expecting, oh, that guy might be like a terrorist, or that guy might be a dangerous person. This. Don't talk to this person. Don't talk to strangers. And all of a sudden, like, why is that like that thing? But yeah, we see all these, like, the only way to get to community ish is like, yeah, the point setting that has the same interests, and like, even like, I just wondering how come like that's norm now, when even like, the only way to find interest is either you go behind a plastic screen and just like talk to people on channel, which you can have a good conversation, yeah, but yeah, most of the time everyone just wants to have a face-to-face conversation.
Our culture, with the more information we're getting, we're winding ourselves up like a cheap watch. We're getting huge amounts of information that gives us even more reasons, pointing at the board, to distrust each other. Amber Alert! How many people had their AT&T phone shrieking at them in the last week?
Yeah.
Did you ask for that information?
No.
Does it affect your life?
No.
And yet, they felt very important that it be shoved right in your face. That even if you had it in privacy mode, it shrieked at you, and it woke a shitload of people up from their naps and stuff, and the biggest amount of information people got about that was going to Google and saying, how do I turn that fucking thing on? Because people assumed, well, of course, we must think of the children. And I get that. And that's honorable. And blah, 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 blah. But underneath it is the assumption that we're bad and that we must smite that sinner. Well, there's a shitload more stuff going on than that. So how does that get precedence? I don't quite get that. You know, I mean, I'm all about, you know, finding those abducted children. Great. They have police for that. But they want us to turn into police as well, whether we want to or not. And it's not okay. Because it gets back to your point about lack of trust. That if we're seeing each other as suspicious, as alien, as terrorist, as bad, then there's more fucking reasons to put on the board for why we shouldn't be close.
Yeah, and you're really going to spot somebody fleeing on the freeway at 3 a.m. in the morning when you're in bed.
There's a really nasty assumption in there. You know, the nasty assumption is, well, of course, we must apprehend him because, you know, children are in danger. But like I said, children are more likely to be struck by lightning than to be abducted.
Just Amber Alert for Northern California in here.
Yeah.
3,000 miles away.
And the problem with this is that it's another reason for men to not be trusted. Because we're male, we have external genitalia, therefore, of course, we should not be allowed around children. I make that point too many times. I rant rather more than I should. But to me, that's the harm, in that it says, there's something wrong with you. By law, you should be kept away from our young. But that is what breaks families up. That's what causes me to dread the family get-together this weekend. I love my family. I'm going to be out of town this weekend. I'm going to be in the San Fernando Valley. Back when my nephew was 6 years old, his name is Will, I noticed something. I noticed that every time I would come up and talk to Will, within a few seconds, some female member of my family would snatch him away. Will has to go do something now. And I started getting more and more pissed off about it. I started really getting angry. And suddenly, when everybody came down to San Diego to see the San Diego Zoo, you know, we're a tourist town, what the hell? Then we're at the lowest part of the zoo, down near Hippo Beach. And there's that long, long ramp. My sister is about 5'2", is an old and out of shape, and she's struggling with this rather corn-fed 6-year-old Will on her shoulders, trying to get him up the hill. And he's getting heavier by the moment. I said, Barbie, I'll carry him. I'm big and strong. I can take on. Oh, no, it's okay. It's okay. And I said, Barbie, I insist. Oh, no. And so I grabbed him, and she says, get your hands off of him. And I said, all right, you hens. We need to have this discussion now. And I gathered my sisters. I said, this is your fault. I said, for some reason, you've taken in your head that I am a problem in this family. I don't accept that. I said, you are intentionally dividing the males of this family. It's not okay. Oh, your feelings don't count. That's a quote. Blah, blah, blah. They shrieked at me. They told me I was wrong. It's now 12 years later. My nephew, Will, is having a lot of difficulty staying out of jail. Because he cannot stop sexually molesting any woman he is near. As in reaching out and pinching the nipple. Slap the hand away. Reaching out, pinching the nipple. Slap the hand away. Doing this to anybody. And so then, the last time I was up in San Fernando Valley with my family for Christmas caroling, 43rd year in a row, we had this discussion. I said, you realize that this is your fault. And they apologized to me. They said, you were right. We should have let you have a hand in his life. That you are not dad. That was the interesting thing they said, because in our household we had a lot of molestation, a lot of abuse. I said, I'm glad you figured it out. You know, 56 years late. I said, but I'm not dad. I'm a healer. I'm a good man. Capital G, capital M. What I stand for in this family is that I am a good influence upon everyone in this family. And you keeping me away from the nieces and nephews has not been to their benefit. I said, I expect some changes in this family, and they're going to come from you guys, because I've made my point. And what I'm saying is that I still have anger. And I'm saying this with my brothers now. I'm not married to that anger. I'm not stuck with it. But I have to say that this is something that is not just in my family. This is larger culture. And it is a killing message on both sides of the divide. It says, older males, or males, period, should not have an influence upon our children. Won't someone think of the children? That's not an excuse anymore. Fuck that. I'm tired of it. Because nobody's really thinking about what children really need. When I was part of the gay youth group, if you can imagine such a thing, when I was about 20 years old, I was part of the local gay youth group. And we had a wonderful guy who was, like, say, 35. And he worked with us in the same way that we're doing this here. He did a lot of coaching, did a lot of support. He was wonderful. He made a huge difference in my life. He showed me what a good man could be. One of the most controversial things that I've ever said, that I've ever written in public, showed up in the Gay and Lesbian Times about 15 years ago. And this relates. They had just done a huge, huge spread on the Gay Youth Center in the Gay and Lesbian Times. No, the update. That's what it was, the update. Probably the biggest article they've ever published. And I wrote an email to them. And I was furious. I said, this is a good article, except you forgot something. I said, you forgot to mention that 2 weeks before you actually interviewed the people for that article, the new female director showed up and she fired every adult male, volunteer and staffer in the building and replaced them with women. I said, don't you think that that's worth mentioning? That her assumption that just because we're male, we are toxic for children. I said, yes, we need mommies, but we need daddies too. I said, you do not have the only voice when it comes to our youth. I said, there is no lesbian on earth that could have taught me when I was 20 years old on what it is to be a man, an admirable, respectable, lovable, and honorable man. Well, they put my email address at the end of this response. And I got so many messages from people. Oh, how could you say such a thing? In each case, I say, is what I said inaccurate? No, but you shouldn't have said it. And it hasn't stopped. If anything, it's only gotten worse. That as males, we have a place in this world. We have the place of being protectors, decision makers, nurturers, leaders, mentors, role models. We have a place. That's what this group is about, is teaching people how to take ownership of who we always were and who we were born to be, where we belong in this world, by being positive role models, by being mentors, by being stalwart volunteers, by being somebody that makes a difference in somebody else's life, by being somebody that other people want to be someday. The reason why I bring this up is because we have to recognize where this is holding us back in order for us to let go of it and move forward. In order for us to achieve ecstasy as individuals, as couples, as a tribe, we have to acknowledge the past and let go of it. Because it's just the past. And we cannot act as if our foot is nailed to the floor and we're going pivoting around and around and around and around like we have no choice. The lesson I give to all these young men that I mentor, and men of all ages that I mentor, is that the past merely forms our character. It does not define us. And the sooner that we all start getting to that point, and the more we agree with each other that, yeah, we're fine the way we are now, the way we show up at this moment, not some other day, but this moment now, the sooner we're going to find much more ecstasy as a community, as brothers, and as lovers. So thank you very much, gentlemen. Have a wonderful evening. All right.